This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, gardeners. How often have you heard somebody say, look, I've put that plant in the garden, but it's the wrong plant, or it's in the wrong location? So often, so easy to do, and there are many, many sad stories to go with it. We're going to solve that situation this morning. Our guest is going to be Jamie McIlwain, who is one of our top landscapers, very much involved with open garden schemes and garden landscape festivals. And we're going to hear from Jamie about both of those later in the program. But right now we're going to solve that situation of how do you choose the right plant for a particular location in your garden?
We will. And we take your questions on it too. If you've got a question for Jamie, call in now, because what will happen is you'll listen and you'll think, I need to ask him a question, and he'll be gone. And the number is 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. We'll get back to general talkback gardening after we speak to Jamie. I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away later in the program as well, but we love your comments also on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. And later, John, you're going to give us some of the results from the Tomato Season Survey 2024.
Some interesting results. It was a great season. I think we've mentioned that the potential was going to come out of it. We can confirm that. But the important thing is, what are the lessons that we've learnt from the tomato survey? More of that later.
Let's welcome. He's here. He's right here with us. Jamie McIlwain, award-winning landscaper extraordinaire, organiser of many different events, which we often speak about. Lovely to have you in the studio again, Jamie.
Good morning, John and Deb. It's lovely to be with you this morning and everyone listening.
People love their garden. They like putting their landscape together, but it usually comes together a plant at a time or a group of plants at a time. And you think, oh, beauty. 5 years later, you look at it and say, oh, that's the wrong tree for that particular location.
How easy is it to go to one of our many lovely nurseries around the state and see a little stick in a pot, a little plant, especially in winter, and think, look, there's lots of these in the nursery, I'll take one home and pop it in the ground. And then in 5 years' time and 10 years' time, or even in 2 years' time, you think, oh my, what have I done here? And there's this great big whopping tree that emerges from the ground simply because it would pay to do some homework and understand what you're buying first before you buy them.
So let's take a look at what are the implications. You find that plant in the garden centre, it's probably got flowers on it, and you fall in love with the flowers and you judge the tree by its flower rather than what you should be judging. What do you look for in a tree or a shrub before you actually say that's the right tree for this particular position in my garden?
Yeah, totally. Look, I think before you go to the nursery, you should really go to the nursery looking for something in particular. Before you go there, you need to understand if you're wanting to grow a hedge or put a screen up between you and your neighbours. What are you trying to achieve? Do you want to maybe just cover the fence line, which in case you only need to grow something that's going to grow to 2 metres, or you might have quite a large property or a power line or something that you want to grow something 5 or 8 or taller. So in which case you can look then and do some homework on the trees going to be suitable for your specific situation, and then you're now educated. You can go to the nurseries and see there's a variety of different species that you can choose from, and then it comes back to personal taste. But first and foremost, you're buying the right tree that's going to grow to the right height and width for your space.
So it's the shape. Get the shape right and at least you're off to a good start. I think it would be beautiful if you could give us an example, and you gave me the story of the Oriental Pear Lament, I think you rephrased it. And, I mean, people have fallen in love with the Oriental Pear, particularly the one that's upright. It's tall and it blocks out, supposedly, it's supposed to block out the two-story building next door. But what people are looking for are trees which will grow in a narrow space, and so they've fallen in love with the Oriental Pear. Tell us why the lament.
The ornamental pear, John, and it started with everyone listening here today, and every time someone mentions ornamental pears on this show, there's a barrage of restraint, vitriolic comments that come in about people who don't like them. And look, first and foremost, the ornamental pear in their all the different forms are a really good tree. And they're overused or overutilized for many reasons, because they have a lovely springtime blossom. They've got quite lovely green glossy leaves. And in autumn, I'm actually looking at the window here at the ABC studio, and yes, they're looking back at me saying, don't speak ill of me. But and they have this amazing autumn change, and they're super tough. So they tick so many boxes, and unfortunately, they have been overused, overutilized, and are becoming the tree version of Agapanthus, John. And we've got to look at this important word, diversity, and there's a lot of different trees and plants out there that will do the same job, and we just need to have a look at different options for that.
But they've got so many good things going for them. What's wrong with them?
Okay, so imagine this. Like the capital pear is probably the most sold tree in the southern parts of Australia. And I want you to look at this. There's the height of this plant or this tree grows to 11 metres, and I've seen them grow a lot taller than that.
11 metres, that's a pretty tall tree.
That's correct. And their width is 3 metres, and I've seen them grow double that. So the average driveway, if you can picture this, is about 2.5 to 3 metres wide. So that's how wide, you know, without any other stimulation, this tree's going to get. And I see people who have this, who have their driveway and then have this like 50 centimetre, 80 centimetre pocket of this narrow bed next to a fence line, and I think, let's just stick about 7 capital pears in there. And this is when we have problems, because the neighbours, well, your property yourself, I mean, they have a propensity to, you know, lift your pavers because they're a big growing plant. They might be blocking out shade or sun creating shade and blocking out sun for your neighbours, and dropping leaves and branches going across driveways. So there's a lot of forethought given to putting plants in the ground that aren't going to negatively affect your neighbours and are going to be fit for purpose.
Can they be pruned from the start so that they don't cause problems?
Yes, absolutely. Pear trees respond really well to pruning. But what I would say, again, going back to my opening statement, if you want a plant that or a hedge that's going to grow to 3 or 2 or 5 metres, why would you put a tree that's going to grow to 11 metres plus in the ground? I mean, yes, you can manage it and maintain it. Some people are unaware of that. But if you can, that's great. But what happens when you leave? If someone moves in and is not inclined or not a gardener, and then these trees grow up to bilio, then there's problems there as well.
I think the concept of having screening plants or hedges is something that people are making a lot of use of. So let's take a look at the alternatives. The ornamental pear, the capital pear in particular, is a problem child, a potential problem child. Some alternatives that are not going to be a problem child.
Right. Well, there's lots of options, and again, going back to what you want. I mean, if you people putting capital pears in to screen a fence that's 2 metres tall is just ridiculous. So there's so many different hedging plants that you can use. What I've done is I've just gone through a few different options as far as small, medium and large, coastal, native, exotic. So we can actually go through a list of a few different options, as well as some new fastigiate growing trees that are on the market as well.
Well, okay. Can I have that list, and can we publish it in the Good Gardening newsletter? Well, obviously, we'll get you to talk about some of those, but you can't talk about all of them.
No.
So that would be a very valuable list. Can I have that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll send that through to you. No problem at all.
Good boy. Righto, so let's take a look at where we're going to start.
All right, well, let's have a look at some... down the coast, there's a lot of people... There's a lot of places down there that things are growing tough. In fact, pear trees don't like growing right next to the coast. So there's a lot of plants that you can use down there as far as hedging plants or screening plants. One of my favourites is a plant called Eleagnus abingii. Its common name is the silverberry. This, you know how people plant viburnum tinus everywhere? This plant is twice as tough as viburnum tinus. It'll take coastal situations. It hedges up beautifully. It's got an amazing silver underleaf, and it's just a very, very tough, reliable plant that would grow quite happily, kept to a metre, and would happily grow from, you know, a metre high to 4 metres high, and create an evergreen screen that will be fit for purpose, whether it's down by the coast, in town, or even up in the hills. Brilliant, brilliant, bulletproof plant, Eleagnus abingii.
Eleagnus abingii. It's a common name, I think people...
Silverberry.
Silverberry. So yep. If you go and ask for a silverberry, yep, garden centres, yep, will know
this is a plant that should be in every single nursery.
It should be, but yes. It's not.
Yeah. another plant that is when we think of coastal gardens, it's often grey foliage and it's a tough situation. If you're after a lush hedge, there's a plant that's really commonly found throughout the nurseries at the moment, and its common name is the Broadway mint, and it's Gracilia is its genus, and it's got a very lush green foliage. Now, you know the Caprosma has that very sort of waxy, green. Yeah. It's a lot like that, but it's got a more interesting sort of slightly longer leaf. It hedges up nicely. So if you're after a lush evergreen hedge down by the coast, this could be the plant for you. It's a really good plant.
Its name?
Its name is Gracilia, and it's Gracilinia. And its common name is Broadway mint. It's actually a plant from New Zealand.
Okay, so put Broadway mint into your web box and see what comes up with.
Don't know how we'll go in the. It'll take light frost, I'd say, but certainly for down the coast, very good plant for down there.
People are looking at trees and shrubs that could be useful in a native garden. Yep. A few natives that may be
one of my favourite natives is the and I've spoken to all the listeners about this plant before. It's the Acmina, and one of my favourites is one called Sublime. So Sublime, like its name suggests, has this lovely lime-coloured fresh new growth. It stays green from the ground up, could easily be kept to under a metre in width, and again could be easily kept to 2 metres, would happily grow to 3 or 4. So a really good plant. Will take. I've got it growing up in Harndorf, so it'll take a decent frost. It's a very handsome looking hedge, and a very good selection for a hedge.
Acmina. Now, many people, of course, would be very familiar with lily pillies. Lily pillies, so, of course, many of them come down with psyllids, and this one doesn't.
What I like about the Acminas is they're resistant to two things. One is the psyllid, and two is also the Syzygium beetle. That's a real problem at the moment. So the Acminas don't tend to get either of those two things. So
that's a double
tick for me.
Yeah, that's marvellous.
Our special guest in the studio is Jamie McIlwain, award-winning landscaper. If you've got a landscape tree issue you'd like to discuss with Jamie, call in now on 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And our special guest in the studio is Jamie McIlwain, award-winning landscaper. We're taking your questions on 1300 222 891. Phil in Belair has called in. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. We live in Belair. I have a fence on the northern side of the property, a galvanised fence. The soil type is pretty heavy clay. We've got a metal trellis against the fence. And we're wanting to plant productive plants, sort of fruit or berries, that'll grow up on the trellis. Happy to do espaliering fruit trees. It's about 20 metres long. We won't get much sun in winter, but because it's on the northern side of the property. So looking for some suggestions.
All right, well, you've got a very interesting spot there where you've got that northern-facing fence. Now, that no matter how hardy a plant is, it may get some issues sitting along that fence line because, we haven't had a really hot summer this year, but, we do have those Februarys and Marches where we get well over 40 degrees at times, and you just get, it becomes a really hostile spot. So, first and foremost, whatever you do plant there, no matter how hardy, I'd suggest you may need some protection on that fence line, whether it be in the form of shade cloth or something else, to protect those plants. So with the spot there, maybe something deciduous for you might be good because a lot of the deciduous trees sort of rest up over winter, so they're not you're obviously not getting much sun there. So and fail, I really like things like pears, plums, apples are easy to espalier, and would probably be providing you improved your soil with organic matter. Clay is a really good soil, it's just got terrible structure, so you just need to get some gypsum, calcium nitrate, and some organic matter in there, and then you'll be on your way.
Lovely. What about berries are there any berries that you might suggest growing against there?
Yep, the berries are all supremely tough too, and again, they sort of rest up over winter, so the lack of sun probably won't affect them that much. So you could certainly, intersperse some berries in there as well.
Lovely. No, that's terrific. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
great.
Phil. Great call. 1-300-222-891 is the number. Now, Joe in Mileland, good morning. You would like some screening.
Yes, good morning. How are you going?
We're well.
Good. I've got a north-facing backyard in Mileland, and on my eastern side at the back, there's a hammerhead was developed with a balcony overlooking my backyard. And I want to put some screening up. An architect recently advised that there's a bamboo that's not a very aggressive one that grows to about 9 metres that I can plant along that fence line.
Yes. I mean, there are clumping bamboos, which I think are great too. So that might be gracilis. That probably gets up to 7 or 8 metres. That's one of the more commonly ones sort that will take sun and get up there. Bamboo is a brilliant, however messy, screening plant and quick growing. There's another smaller one, if anyone is interested, called Alphonse Carr. It has really interesting culms and will only grow to about 4 or 5 metres. Probably closer to 5 metres and will take sun.
Okay, so its name again?
Alphonse Carr. But if you're wanting to grow to 9 metres, that's like gracilis is probably one for you. It's gracilis or gracilimus.
Gracilis.
Yeah, if you Google that, you'll find that's one of the more commonly bamboo, one of the more common bamboos sold.
And it's easily controlled because I have heard that they can spread quite rapidly.
What
as
they
well.
Do is they heave, so they grow laterally at the bottom. So they'll push outwards, so you won't get growth coming from meters away from where the plant is planted, but they will heave outwards. So they grow outwards, if you know what I mean. And they really do need, you know, I'd say 1.5 meters to be fair, which they'll grow to in 10 years' time.
That was my next question on behalf of Joe was, you know, how much space do you need to plant? Yeah. Because you think of bamboo, you don't need much room because it's just going straight up. But you're explaining it might hit the fence.
Yeah, look, you can put root guard, and I would suggest putting a root guard in there, which you can, if you Google that, there's a lot of places where you can buy that from. So that'll help the plant from, you know, going underneath paving and driveways. So that would be a responsible thing to do. And also, you can actually go around the outside of the base of the bamboos, you know, seasonally, and actually dig up any of the advantageous sort of rhizomes from spreading outwards.
Thanks very much for the call, Joe. Rob's in Black Forest. You've got an apricot tree question, Rob.
Yes, good morning. Actually, it's a couple questions. We've got a place in Black Forest, northerly facing backyard aspect. And a few fruit trees in the backyard, but just planted an apricot tree about 2 years ago. And this is the second time this happened. We've either got some nocturnal animals that have stripped a lot of the leaves, almost 90% of the leaves off the apricot tree, which is probably only about 2 metres high. I'm just wondering, as we're coming into autumn, whether that's going to survive or is there anything we can do about it?
Yeah. Are the leaves sort of eaten back to like where the... There's a little bit of the leaf left on the stem.
Pretty much taken it all away. All the leaf off has been nibbled. It's just the stalks almost of the leaves. So yeah. Just eaten all the.
I'd say possums first and foremost, yep. And they're hard to control. Exclusion really is the only way of doing that. So you may need to net. Could be rats. Sounds more like possums.
And what's the likelihood of survival of the tree?
Look, I find, a lot of plants get invaded by things like cherry pear slug and they denude the trees of leaves so they can't photosynthesize. Being a young tree, it probably hasn't had time to develop too much yet, but it'll have vigor. So if you can keep this growing season, if you can keep whatever is eating those leaves off your tree, it should be fine.
Okay. Second question, we've also got a crabapple tree which is about 25 years old, so it's about 6 metres in the backyard as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, I'm just wondering whether, how far it's going to grow and whether by taking off about 20% of it, what impact will that have on the tree and whether it's just going to grow back to that same height again or would I have to keep doing it?
I'll say yes and yes and yes to everything there. So crabapples, I'm presuming it's an ornamental one. Crabapples are one of my favourite trees and will take a hard prune. So what I might suggest you do is prune it back beyond where you want it and then let it grow into that space and then keep it to that space. But, crabapples are a lovely, tough plant. And
Well, there you go. Jamie loves it. Thanks, Rob, very much for the call. On the text line, Kathy says, I have two 30-year-old ornamental pear trees starting to split at the middle of the trunk near the base. Can I save them? Can I use a metal girth? I want to save them as they provide incredible shade.
An arborist will say you've got a technical term called an included union, which means it's got bad structure. And this is the... Every plant has all good points, and the one bad point about pyrus is they can be structurally poor, especially if they're growing quick. So I think you will, and they do split with great regularity. So what I would be doing is actually bring that tree down hard before you get a very ugly split down there. So they'll reshoot from that. And it's something you could either do as a hard winter prune, which means you're going to get lots of vigorous growth in spring, or if you can manage it and want to keep it to a certain height, then a summer prune would be... it's getting late to do that. But
Jamie,
possibly...
when you do cut it back, you've still got the split there. Do you sort of try and put the split together, or do you chop one side
out?
Yeah,
so what I'm envisaging is a tree that's probably, you know, close to 8 or 10 metres in height, and I'm going to bring it down to 2 or 3 metres in height. So we're going to get a whole and keep it to a 5-metre plant. So we're not going to allow it to grow those great big long arching branches that the pears do. And because of their terrible structure,
so cut it back and start all over again.
Yeah, do that. It'll respond from that. But I'd get onto that.
Just coming back to bamboo, Paul at Chandler's Hill says, I'm getting good results in wicking beds. 2 years on, they do need lots of H2O though. Nat says, can Jamie recommend a tree to replace an old ornamental plum that is both ornamental and will help with a bit of shade, smallish yard and small lawn area?
Yeah, there's lots of options there. I'm not going to mention crepe myrtles because crepe myrtles and a close following the overuse of the pear. How about there's an interesting plant called a Persian witch hazel? It's Parotia persica. It comes from Iran. It has a serrated or a deeply veined leaf. Beautiful plant, extremely tough, and the most amazing autumn change. A lovely small growing tree that probably get to, I don't know, maybe 5 by 7.
Okay, if we're really quick, we'll take Christine from Prospect. What's your question, Christine?
I'd like to know what to plant instead of an Angonis flexuosa, which has taken over the spot between my kitchen window and the units on the other side of the fence.
The Angonis are a great plant, but they do get hefty, and I think this is a exact situation of putting the, you know, a great plant in the wrong spot. So are you obviously into your natives?
Told that it wouldn't grow more than a couple of metres.
No, that's well, there is a dwarf form of Agonis flexuosa, but that will only get to about a metre, but it doesn't sound like you got that one. So if you're into your natives, there's a really, really good Banksia called Sentinel, which is very narrow, which might suit you quite well, has lovely yellow flowers and will only grow to about 3 or 4 metres.
Lovely, Christine. Thank you very much. So many questions on the text line, but we've got a bit more to cover with Jamie before he goes. Jamie McElwain, our special guest.
Just before we move away from alternate trees to grow in the garden, one of the nice things about talking to top landscapers is that they do their homework and they come up with newer varieties and they can assess newer varieties as they come in. You've got one or two alternative newer plants that should be considered.
Yes, absolutely. So we're just talking about crabapples before with that previous caller. There's a new mallus or crabapple on the market, so it's ornamental and it's called Raspberry Spear. What I love about this tree is it's very, very, very upright, columnar, and as John likes the word, fastigiate. It could be easily kept to 1 to 2 metres wide, and it would naturally grow left unpruned to only about 5 metres high. So it has this lovely sort of purple hue to its foliage, has a beautiful pink flower in spring, and like I said, is very fiercely upright columnar growing plant. So the Malus raspberry spear, very fairly new on the market. I've just been seeing it in at the nurseries over the last few months. So it's cracking
one,
plant.
One more.
One of my favourites. It's very hard to beat this plant for a yellow foliage in autumn, and that's the ginkgo, one of the oldest plants on earth. There's the ginkgo biloba lemon-lime spire. So again, it's a very small-growing ginkgo. Will only grow about 1 metre wide, and left unpruned would only grow to about 5 metres high. So if you want something a little bit different, the ginkgo is a fabulous plant. It does spend its first few years putting energy into its root plate, so it sort of sits there and doesn't grow too much for a little while, but then will put on fairly good growth from there on in. So a very fastly, tightly upright columnar growing small tree.
Lemon lime spire.
Yeah.
And because it's new, don't expect it to be in every garden centre yet.
I'm seeing it. But it's been around for a couple of years, this one. So it is around the place. And definitely, if you go to your garden, the people who run the garden centres are very clever people and know all the supplies and what they've got. So if it's not in the garden centre that you're at, speak to someone there and I'm sure that they can get it in for you.
A couple of years ago, the Landscape Association, Master Landscapers and the Open Garden Scheme put together a festival of landscapers. Is that going to happen again?
Well, we've got some very exciting news, John. We've just started on it on the 2025 edition of it just recently.
So next year.
Yes, next year. So if you want to put in a... If you've got a calendar for next year, the 5th and 6th of April. So far, I haven't even seen the gardens yet, but we've got a lot of interest from some of the people who have shown their gardens before, and we've got a lot of new landscapers and designers and a few of our industry-leading companies also involved. So very excited about that and looking forward to bringing you updates on that down the track.
And just very, very briefly, in 30 seconds, the potential for people to become involved in the Open Garden Scheme.
Yes, so Open Gardens, look, people, it's not for members only. I'd love to invite everyone to come and look at our gardens and be involved. And if you know of, if you've got a lovely garden or if you know of someone who has a lovely garden that's maintained to a high standard, we'd love to hear from you. New gardens are very exciting for our regular visitors and members.
Well, we'll hear more about both of those, I'm sure, in coming months with Jamie McIlwain. Thank you very much for coming into the studio today. Really great to have you here.
It's my pleasure.
Award-winning landscaper, and we'll tune in with him before the 2025 Landscape Festival. You heard it here first on Talkback Gardening. In just a moment, we're going to hear the results of the Tomato Season Survey 2024.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe.
On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, gardeners, particularly those living in regional areas. And a few people have recorded about 5 millimetres of rain during the week.
Isn't that interesting? So have the showers made much difference to our gardens, John?
Don't rely on them for watering your garden. They'll disappear very, very, very quickly. It's a long time now, so it's probably 12 weeks since we've had a significant rain. Darren Ray, a climatologist, is suggesting we don't get any significant rains until probably about the middle of May. We might start to see the showers coming through more regularly and dropping a little bit more, but... 5 millimetres of rain is not going to do much good, so don't rely on it. And the other thing, of course, is soil temperatures have dropped dramatically in the last 3 weeks. Mm. Since the beginning of the month, they've gone from 20 degrees to round about 16 degrees across the metropolitan area. It just means that the plants that were growing so quickly when you put them in the ground, the new seedlings, they'll still grow, but growth will be pretty slow.
Okay. Well, look, speaking of growth, we're going to hear how the Tomato Season Survey 2024 panned out a little bit later. So I'm looking forward to hearing your results on that, John. Also, we are wanting your calls. That's what we do in Talkback Gardening. We want your calls. So if you've got a gardening issue that you would like John to help you tackle, call in now on 1300 222 891. 1300 222 891. 0491. We love your comments on the text line. The text number is 0467 922 891. I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away later in the program, and I will give one away on the phone line and one away on the text line. So if you'd like to get prepared now, put your name and postal address into your text. Get ready to send it off to 0467 922 891, but don't do it now. Don't do it now. Do it when we ask you to call in, ask you to send it in. But the phone number for John's advice right now is 1-300-222-891. Now, John, Aphrodite on the text line is saying, how do I subscribe to the Good Gardening newsletter? Not hard to do, is it?
Very easy. Just put in John Lamb's newsletter. You can get it'll come up that way, but you can probably be a bit smarter, I guess.
We just put in John, JonLamb. Good Gardening, and that will take you to it, Aphrodite. Just some texts coming through in relation to trees. This texter says, ornamental pears are used as street trees in Woodville South. Jesse in Mitcham says, someone has planted a baby eucalyptus Periniana mallee in the verge less than 20 centimetres from the footpath and less than 2 metres from a road intersection. Yikes. Might be 15 centimetres now, but it grows to 10 metres and is huge in diameter.
Yes. Take on board. Jamie was saying, OK, the capital pear in particular can cause problems, and the ornamental pears, many of those can cause problems. But the important thing is you're in charge, and don't let them become problem children. The use of secateurs from a very early stage, and it's the way you prune them and shape them, is very important. And traditionally, you say with a deciduous tree, you'd cut to an outside bud. With your fastidious trees, you cut to an inside bud, so that it just means that the branches that come up and grow tall, they grow towards the centre of the tree rather than coming out and blocking the driveway and reaching over next door and causing problems.
This texter says, my neighbour has planted a row of oriental pears against our fence line, and they draw all the water from my garden beds along the side of the fence. I need to water every day, sometimes twice a day. I think that's time for a chat with the neighbour, do you think, John?
And that's the issue, of course, is you think it looks good, and certainly they do, but it's the other problems, disturbance to the neighbours, the amount of extra water they need, and the fact that that once the roots system is established, the roots will find water in your garden, and whether you're trying to grow a lawn or other things in the garden, you'll find that rather difficult as well. Yeah. And that's the issue, is Jamie sort of saying, look, think about the size of the plant that you're going to grow and where it's going to go, and match the size of the plant or make sure that the plant is suitable to the location, and you overcome many problems.
Absolutely. I'll come back to more of your texts if we have time this morning. Katrina is in Uraidla and joins us. Good morning, Katrina.
Good morning.
Now, you've got an olive tree. What's happened to it?
It's got a small black bug infesting the backs of the trees, and the leaves have gone yellow, and they look very unhappy. They're not very old, these olive trees, but I think it's an olive lace bug, and I'm just wondering what John would advise about how to remove it.
Right. Okay, there can be a bit of a problem, and particularly at this time of the year, numbers build up. The olive tree, of course, is pretty tough and will recover. But if you need to do something, I would suggest that you use, if it's a little small bug, probably Success Ultra. Success Ultra is very, very low activity in terms of toxicity. And the important thing is its translaminar goes into the leaf. The lace bug comes along, has a munch of the leaf and gets bowled over. And it lasts probably for a couple of weeks, whereas most of the insecticides are probably going to knock off some of the good guys, and also they don't last very long should we get a rain.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Katrina, for the call. 1-300-222-891 is the number. Helen is in Collinswood, just around the corner. Good morning, Helen.
Hi, good morning. I've got 6 little blueberries in little plastic pots that I got from a nursery some time ago, and they've just been sitting there. But now I'd like to put them in much bigger pots. Is it a good time to do so?
Are these evergreen or the deciduous ones?
They're evergreen. They're the blueberry misty.
Yes. Because the blueberry is pretty durable in terms of cold hardiness, I'd be doing it this weekend if you possibly can. Certainly the quicker the better. If you do, it'll get established. Its root system has got an opportunity of just re-establishing itself before winter. The evergreen blueberries that are readily available from garden centres at the moment tend to start flowering very early in springtime and have their fruits probably very early in summer. So you want to give the plant as much opportunity as possible to re-establish itself, and so it's ready to be able to perform early next year.
Okay, and if I don't manage to get my act together and do it this weekend, if I leave them in the little plastic pots throughout winter, is it okay to do it when spring comes or not really?
Yes, I would be doing it maybe very late in winter, the last week in winter, or maybe very early in September.
Which is the better option, this weekend or spring for the plant?
If it was mine, I'd be doing it this weekend.
You would. Okay. All right. Great. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Helen. Good luck with the job. Just on trees, further texts that are coming through. This person says the hackberry tree grows quite big for a street tree and leaves lots of leaf litter and berries. This texter says my neighbour planted an oak tree 50 centimetres from our fence line and it's nothing but trouble, I can imagine. Draws all the water from my garden. It grows over my driveway and I can't get through without damaging my car. Oh, I think that's not a very good situation there. I hope you can deal with that one. Joyce says, our short street has way too many Manchurian pear trees on the verge, so very impressed that our West Torrens Council planted my request of an ivory curl tree, Buchanamia, is that right, to replace a dead tree, native with sprays of perfumed flowers.
Yes, interesting. There are so many alternatives that are far more suitable than the much-loved and much-planted and probably over-planted oriental pear.
Yes, and just on that, Sherilee from Dulwich says, we loved our pear trees. No complaints from our neighbours. Above the ground was never a problem. It was what was lurking below. Invasive roots causing havoc with stormwater and sewer pipes, and despite removing trees and stumps and unfortunately poisoning, the roots continue to shoot. Yes, Sherilee, thank you very much. And just, John, before we move on, coming back to the Good Gardening newsletter, Wendy says, I want to change my email address for the Good Gardening newsletter, but none of the links work. Now, we've discussed this before. You need to unsubscribe, don't you, and then resubscribe with your new
email. That's right, yes. We can't do it for you. You've got to do it. It's a free newsletter. You must, if you want it, you've got to subscribe to it. But if you go into an existing newsletter, you'll find that probably halfway through it, two-thirds of the way through it, will be if you want to resubscribe or if you want to send the email to a friend, you just click on that little box and follow the directions. But you must change, and many people are having problems with their provider, their internet provider. And again, they're sort of saying, can you please change our email address? No, I'm sorry, we can't. You have to do that, and that's just the way it works.
Yes, so unsubscribe and resubscribe with your new address is the easiest way to do it. Now, John's going to give us the tomato season survey 2024 results very shortly, but I just wanted to put a shout out for the University of Adelaide researchers who are asking South Australians to donate soil samples from their backyards for a study that's examining how widely spread per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, they're called PFAS, are in our home gardens. They've been described as forever chemicals. They've got very high resistance to degradation. They're very harmful to human health and to the environment. So there is this study that is happening with the University of Adelaide School of Agriculture, Food and Wine. Now, it's not that hard to be a part of it. There are lots of extra places available if it's something that you've tried before. It's really important to be a part of it. So if you can go to the University of Adelaide website, now I'm just desperately looking for it here and can't find the actual email address for you to contact. I will do that. But it's if you put PFAS, they want to collect another 150 samples from you from people's backyard in South Australia of your soil samples. It's University of Adelaide PFAS chemical study. If you put that into your search engine, hopefully it will bring up how you need to make contact. I will do a little bit of a search in just a moment for you as well, but a very important survey.
And of course, the contact, the click on and contact us in this week's Good Gardening newsletter.
There you go. So if you've subscribed to the Good Gardening newsletter, you can go straight through. Well, what lessons have we learnt about our wonderful tomato gardeners here in South Australia in the Tomato Season Survey 2024? John will tell us all next.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Across South Australia and Broken Hill, great to be with you this morning. Now, John, I understand that you received over 700 responses to this year's Tomato Season Survey 2024.
So many thanks to those people that did take time out to fill in the survey and tell us exactly what kind of a season you had. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago that it looked like it was going to be a good season. We can now confirm it. It's according to the survey, which has been computerised for the last 12 years, it's the best season in the last 12 years.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, well, would you believe? 77% of all the people that filled in the form had either a good or an excellent season, and that's 5% better than the previous, and bearing in mind that the average good and excellent usually comes in round about 50%, 55%, and in a hot heat wave kind of a season it goes down to about 30%, so 77% is good, and it's nice to know that people are having fun growing their tomatoes. It was a relatively mild season, and probably it's the seasonal factor has a major effect, but it's not just the hot weather, it's also the cool weather that is having a significant effect. And I think if we take a look at the effect of hot weather, 35% sort of said the hot weather, even though it was relatively cool, the hot days, the few hot days we had, 35% said it had a moderate effect on the crop. And the important thing, and I'm very, very heartened by this, 62% of the better growers, and I should explain that when you fill in the survey, if you have a good result, it goes one way, and if you had a disappointing result, it goes another way. So we can look at what the good gardeners are doing and the disappointing gardeners and compare one against the others. But in terms of shading, 62% of all the good gardens protected their crops, regardless of the season, with shade cloth. And that's very, very important. 34% of those protected their crops all day. And that also is very, very important. But 54% actually didn't shade their crops all day. They only did it on hot days. And that's interesting, I think, because what is emerging is people are learning not only how to put up a shade area, a shade structure to protect their tomatoes, but they can also now be flexible enough to be able to say, righto, well, there's the framework, and it's a hot day, so across comes the curtain, and on a cool day, the curtain can be...
comes back. And yeah, great flexibility
urge, and there was just a great need for somebody to commercialise the shade cloth systems for home gardeners. You can pay a lot of money for some pretty ritzy kind of things, and somebody out there, a Lions Club or one of the organisations, must be able to say, hey, listen, we can make a quid out of this, but because there's a tremendous need of flexible systems that people can have that look attractive, not nightmares, look attractive and can actually use that.
Well, a couple of years ago, we had our wonderful shade cloth competition, John, and didn't we see some incredible innovations that people have in their own home gardens, lots of them using sort of piping and making little arcs across their plants, whatever the plants might have been that needed the shade.
Yes, and it's interesting, probably two-thirds of them were permanent structures. It would be interesting to repeat the survey, and I would be heartened to find that maybe more than 50% are flexible systems, and so that you can have something that's attractive, and you go out there and protect your tomatoes when you have to.
Well, that's one for next summer, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and so we take a look at, it wasn't just the hot weather. Normally it's the hot weather that causes the problems. It wasn't. It was the cool season that caused the problems. And 42% of the top growers said cool weather was a major factor and had an impact on their crops. And the effect of cool weather, of course, is slow ripening. 79, almost 80% of top growers said slow ripening was a problem during the growing season. So 17% said small fruit was the problem, and 18% said there was a problem with tomato fruit set. But the important thing is you can protect your tomatoes from heat with shade. But what do you do when it's a cool season?
Yeah.
Aha. Well, that means you think about the variety you grow. And Deb, there has been a very significant change in what we grow. And I'd like to think that the surveys have had a big influence in doing this. If we go back 20 years ago, most people grew a Grossless tomato or one of the medium-sized tomatoes, Grossless, and along came Mighty Red. It became Top, and there's Apollo and Roma. And so they have been the dominant varieties. But then we had, we go back to almost 10 years now, when we had heat wave conditions. And we go back, first of all, to the earlier on, heritage tomatoes. Everybody was getting into heritage tomatoes. Along came the heat waves, and the heritage tomatoes didn't stand up to the hot weather. And so they've gone from about 20% down to 5%. And the interesting thing is that people discovered cherry tomatoes, and they were promoted widely in talkback gardening. And as a result, last year, the cherry tomatoes were almost as popular as the traditional tomatoes. Well, would you believe this year? It's very, very different. Cherry tomatoes have won the prize, and there's about 14% more people had cherry tomatoes than they had traditional tomatoes. And so there it is. The seasons can be changeable. And if it's going to be a cool season, then maybe you think about the variety of tomato that you're going to grow. And cherry tomatoes have certainly got, they're popular because of their ability to be able to stand up to both hot and cool weather. And say, okay, so it's cool weather. Might I then sort of say, we now have access to a climatologist here in South Australia, Darren Ray, independent climatologist, and Darren comes up 3 or 4 months ahead, and he will say, spring is going to be wet and cool. And if it's going to be wet and cool, then you know that, okay, well, you don't plant your tomatoes early. You wait until the soils warm up and you plant them then. Or Darren can also say, I think we're in for a summer of heat waves. And so you say, righto, we need to make sure we've got our shade cloth in place. If it's going to be a cool kind of a summer, well, then you know that maybe you can get away with planting a second lot of tomatoes after Christmas. Now, that's only just some of the issues that have come out of it. And time of planting is fascinating. And rather than try and sort of get through it in 2 minutes, I think I'll put that on hold. I won't put it in next week's gardening program because it's a very special program when we'll be talking to Ian Tolley, Citrus Authority, and we'll be having a mini citrus program. I think time of planting will be an issue that we'll take a look at. And there are many other issues, of course, which will work into the talkback gardening over the next season and, of course, in the Good Gardening newsletter.
We've got plenty of time, John, if you wanted to take anything further. But what I realise I have not done is give away our two ABC Gardening Australia magazines. So I'd better do that right now. If you've not won anything from ABC Radio Adelaide or ABC Local Radio in the last month and you'd like to win a magazine, you can call in on 1300 1300 222 891, or you can text your full name and address into 0467 922 891, and we'll take one via the text line and one via the telephone line. John, on the text line, Wendy says, I picked the last of my tomatoes 2 days ago. And in fact, last week, I think I picked the last of just self-seeded tomatoes that had grown, but just delicious. There's just something about the flavour when you grow them yourself. It's just so different, isn't it?
I love hearing from gardeners that are saying, righto, it's not typical, but it's atypical, and I'm atypical. I'm still harvesting my tomatoes for whatever particular reason. And often come in with the sort of say, I'm not only harvesting my tomatoes, this is why, or maybe a hint of why, and whether it's self-sown or whether it's been growing in a rubbish compost heap or something like that. It's nice to hear.
I love that. It's like manna from heaven when you get it free from nature. What tomatoes did you grow in tomato season 2024, John?
I try three types. I usually use one that grows in containers. First Prize is very, very reliable, very, very good. I put in a Black Russian, and I also had a Trust tomato. Again, I have a major problem with a little corgi dog, and she is incredible in working out how to get into the structure that I thought was going to be dog-proof.
It's incredible, isn't it? Oh, my doggy does the exact same thing. You know, he used to keep disappearing down the side where there's really nothing very interesting for dogs, only for me to discover weeks later that there were self-seeded tomatoes growing. He was getting around and picking them off and eating them.
And then defecating and passing the tomatoes. I love that.
Thanks very much for that. And just a congratulations to our telephone winner of the ABC Gardening Australia magazine, Margaret in Keith. And Dave in Edithburg has won via SMS. So congratulations and thank you very much for those. So, John, this Friday's newsletter that just landed yesterday had quite a bit in it in relation to Tomato Season Survey 2024, but you'll be rolling it out.
Yes, there'll be more information in next week's newsletter. The time of sowing or time of planting is tremendously important, and I'd like to work that into the next Talkback Gardening program in the next couple of weeks. And then as the issues arise, or it's topical to talk about a particular issue, but there are so many informations about nutrition and the use of different kind of chemicals that people are using, and it's important that we give that feedback to those that actually took part in the program.
Yes, definitely. Just more feedback from you straight up. Mary in Cuddly Creek says, I still have four tomato plants going strong, ripening slowly. Tommy Toe and Cherry Berry pulled all the large tomatoes out. Mary, you've had a great season. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. And Jamie on Warralty in York Peninsula says, our tomato plant that came up from our pig's poo self-seeding has been amazing and is still growing and producing and has sent a beautiful picture of loads of tomatoes in a container. So lots of successful people still enjoying the fruits of tomato season 2024.
At the end of the survey, we say, are you going to grow and plant tomatoes next year? And would you believe 99% of people said yes?
Why wouldn't you? And just ducking in here, Richie in Woodville says, I'm still harvesting my cherry Tommies and it's just gone mad with another flush of flowers, raised bed, self-seeded, just great soil.
There we are. Well, it's come to the end of another program, and just a heads up that don't miss it if you're a citrus grower. Ian Tolley from the Riverland, probably our top citrus authority here in Australia, will be our guest in the studio, running a little bit of a mini masterclass, and I look forward to that. Until then, good gardening.